And now I would like to introduce Yvette from San Diego.
Hi, I'm Yvette and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Yvette.
Wow, I'm very nervous. I want to thank everybody for allowing me to come here and share my sobriety with you, and welcome to anybody that's new or the first time to this meeting. Char and Ski, congratulations. That's awesome. That is really awesome. Larry asked me to speak, I think it was a couple nights ago. And he called me, and I just knew he was going to ask me to speak somewhere. And I was like, I'm not answering the phone. I'm not answering the phone. And I didn't. And so the next morning I called, and my friend said, well, why did you call him? I said, well, I can't not call him back. You know, that's not how I do my sobriety. And he said, Yvette, I'm in a bind. Can you speak? No, he said, do you want to speak? And I said, no. No, I don't want to. No, I don't. But will I? Yes, I will. That was one of my experiences when I first got sober, was my conversation with God, and that's that I would spread the message on how I got here. And I'm nervous because I'm a very different person than what I was when I walked in here. I don't like to tell people about how it used to be, because I don't like that person, but it's what got me here, and I'm very grateful for that, because Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life. I started drinking when I was 11 years old, and before I started drinking, I never felt like my sisters. I never felt like any of... Well, I can't say that because I don't know how they felt. I just know I felt different than everybody around me. My friends in school, my sisters. I have three older sisters. And my father was an alcoholic. He was to a few programs, so it was admitted. I'm not calling him something he didn't admit to. And my mother was a social drinker. And in fact, I don't ever remember seeing my mom drunk growing up. But my dad, yes. My dad was an alcoholic. And he died in his disease back in 1985. But I felt very different from everybody. In school, I would sit to myself and felt different, you know. And being in an alcoholic family, I would never have my friends come over, because it just wasn't... It wasn't something you did, you know. I mean, my dad was a very hardcore drinker, and so we just were never allowed to invite our friends over. So I didn't. And again, I felt very different, because I used to hear all my friends, you know, talk about sleepovers, and, you know, I never did that. And so I started drinking at 11, and I remember my first drink. I remember that first drink. I was... supposed to go see my dad. My mother and father had split up, and I was supposed to go see my father back in Wyoming. That's where I'm originally from. And he was driving out. I lived in Santa Barbara with my mom, and he was driving out to pick me up. And he got in Vegas and called and let us know where he was at, and he was drunk. And my mom said I couldn't go. And it was just devastating to me, because I had invited a girlfriend, my best friend. I invited her to go for the summer with me back to Wyoming, you know, and I was so excited about it. You know, we were going back to the reservation. I'm Native American, and that's where I was going for the summer. And once again, my dad was drunk, and my mom said no, and I didn't understand that. You know, it's like, what do you mean, no? I grew up with my dad drinking. Why was it different now? You know, and I realize now, you know, she was trying to protect us the best way she could. You know, and he was driving, you know, and he was drunk. So, but at the time, I was 11 years old. I didn't understand it. And my older sisters were drinking, and I went out with them, and I drank. And for the first time, I felt like I could fit in with other people. You know, I didn't feel apart from. I felt a part of. Well, those were the type of people I chose to hang around with, too. So, yeah. And I remember my sister, I used to always go out with her, and her rule was that we had to drink a quart of Colt 45 before we even went out anywhere. And this was on the bridge because, you know, I was 11, she was 12, our friends were the same age. And so we would stand on the bridge that went over the freeway, and we would all stand there until we finished that quart of beer. And I hated the taste of alcohol. I did not like the taste of alcohol. I hated it. So I would chuggle it down just so I could get it over with. And then we would go out. And the girlfriends that I started going out with used to get really upset with me because I never stopped at the first one. You know, they would drink and feel a buzz and quit. And I wouldn't. I would drink until I was just falling all over the place, and they'd be all mad at me, you know. Straighten up, you know. And that's the way I drank from the beginning. And, you know, it took me a lot of time in sobriety to realize. See, I was in a lot of denial when I first came in here. I didn't get into Alcoholics Anonymous until I had, like, 7 years sober. I was not an alcoholic. I just wasn't. You know, I was a lot of other things, and I was not an alcoholic. And that was one of my justifications why I'm not comfortable speaking in this meeting. I told a friend of mine, I said, well, I can justify why I don't want to speak. And she said, and why is that? I said, well, number one, I don't go to that meeting. And she laughed at me and said, well, a lot of the speakers don't. I'm like, okay, well, another one is, and the same thing John said is I have a lot of drugs in my story. And sometimes I just don't feel comfortable talking about that in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And she said, well, Yvette, what do you do? And I said, well, I guess I just get up there and talk about the disease, you know. And that's what I do. Like I said, I started drinking when I was 11 years old. And it went from drinking to drugs because I had blackouts when I drank. And I didn't like it. I didn't realize it. In fact, I had 7 years of sobriety before I could tell you I had blackouts. You know, I was too young to be drinking. I was only 11 years old after all, so I was too young to be. And that's, I really believed that. I really, really, with all my heart, believed that that's why I had blackouts, was because I was just too young to be drinking. And it wasn't until I came into the rooms and got into step work with a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous that helped me to look at the book and read the book and identify with the book to realize I have this disease of alcoholism, you know. And so the drug part of my history is that started when I was like 15, 16 years old. By this time, I had two children. And you know, I was a little more comfortable with that because I didn't have the blackouts. I felt I had a little more control. You know, you know, I don't want to stay in the disease, but I do want to let you know how far down my disease went. And, you know, a couple of things that happened to me is, dealing in that kind of life, I was locked up. I was put in jail and for a few years and did my time. And that was part of my story because of the things I used to do. And, you know, I used to, and I share this a lot when I get my time. By the way, my sobriety date is October 17th of 1995. And my home group is the Great Fact Group up in La Mesa. If you want to, it's not the Great Fat Group, it's the Great Fact Group. And if you want to know what the Great Fact is, it's on page 25 of the Big Book. And I was a little nervous, so I had to go look, because I was like, is it 13 or 25? So I went and looked, and it's page 25 if you want to know what the great fact is. Oh, wow. Wow. And you know what? My sobriety date, nobody can take that away from me. You know, I have that. I can give it away, but nobody can take that from me. And my home group is a place where I get to share about me, and people love me and accept me for who I am, which is a little difficult, like I said, because a lot of my story is I feel a little different than a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and maybe not. Maybe I just want to be different. You know, I want to be unique. So, one big significant thing that happened in 1985, and I could not tell you because I was very, very gone in my disease, and a couple of things happened, and I couldn't tell you in what order. I can just tell you that was the year. And my father had passed away, and I went into the hospital with what they call endocarditis, and it's bacteria clogged in the arteries. And I was in there for about 6 months, and could not tell you in how that went. And also at that time, the guy who we were having illegal activities with came to our house, and my ex-husband shot and killed him, and he died right in front of me, and that was very devastating, you know. And my kids were on their way home, and I had to get them out of there, and you know, it was just, you know, and that was the kind of lifestyle I lived. It was the lifestyle I lived, and I took off in the, you know, it was just like a story on TV, and the helicopters were flying around with their spotlights on looking for me because I had taken off with my kids and a lot of drugs and weapons and stuff, and I was scared and didn't know what to do, and hid out. And that's what I did. I hid out. I learned to hide out very well. And all that happened in 1985, and like I said, I can't tell you what happened in what order it happened because I was just gone. And after that is when I ended up doing my time. And my children got taken away from me, and I was, at that time, I was on El Cajon Boulevard, going from motel to motel, not having a place to stay because I lost everything in my life. And, you know, I was relieved. You know, I was really relieved. I didn't have to have responsibility for them any longer. I still loved them. You know, but I knew I was at the point where I could not take care of my children anymore. And that was really hard because when I had my children at a very early age, I was 15 when I had my first one and 16 when I had my second one. And that was all I wanted to do was be a mother, you know. And I couldn't. My disease just had a hold of me, and I couldn't. And, you know, it was just a crazy lifestyle. I remember getting out and I had spent a little over a year in a camp in Phoenix, Arizona. And I got out, and I was in a halfway house in downtown San Diego, and still in custody. I was in federal custody. And it didn't dawn on me that I was still in custody and I couldn't drink. And that sounded like a really good idea to me. I hadn't had any alcohol for quite a while. And so a bunch of us got together and went downtown to a little pub down there and got plastered, and it sure felt good. Yeah. And then we were all walking back to the halfway house, and I was like, uh-oh, we were not supposed to be drinking. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Alcohol is legal. You know, it's like, yeah, but we're not, you know. I wasn't the brightest bulb in the room. I started to say this. I share this a lot when I get my tokens, and that's I used to be on El Cajon Boulevard, and I remember one night a gentleman picking me up and asking me if I was the lady of the night, and I thought, wow, a compliment. You know, I had been dealing with, you know, some really rough people, you know, out there, and when he said that, it really sounded nice. It did. With the state of mind I was in, it sounded nice. And I said, well, yes. And not too long after that, I was in Las Colinas. And I realized it was not a compliment. I was naive in a sense, but not, you know. And that's just, you know, that's just how life was. And it was like that for a very long time. And I can tell you in 1995 when I decided to get sober. Well, I didn't decide to get sober. I really did not decide to get sober. You know, I didn't. That was the furthest thing from my mind. You know, the few times that I was in jail and going to court, and they would tell me, well, you can go to a recovery home and not do as much time. I'd be like, what for? Why would I want to do that? That didn't make any sense to me, because I wanted to go out. I knew no other lifestyle is what it was. And I didn't want to go out and... Yeah, I didn't think I was worthy of anything else but what I was living in, you know. And I didn't think I was capable of it. And so I stayed out there. And even when the judges wanted me to go to a recovery home, I said, no, just leave me in here. I'll do my time and you know, I'm okay, really. And the last time I had a drink was October 17th of 1995, and I was in a state where I had both of my children were gone. I didn't have a place to go. I hooked up with somebody and was just, you know, just being crazy out there, being crazy, and you know, was having blackouts because I was drinking again, and I was having blackouts and then doing a lot of other chemicals and you know, to tell you the truth, I don't know what happened. The last time I could not tell you what happened. I think it was a spiritual awakening. I think that I had no other choice, and I reached that point where no human could help me, and it was up to me to let God help me. You know, a good friend of mine's in the hospital, and that's just what he said he realized. He went in for a quadruple bypass, and he said, God either is or isn't. And I had hit that spot, and I was very confused. You know, I didn't look anything like I do today. One of my eyes would wander, you know, and I had teeth missing and black teeth, and I was a mess. I was just a mess. And I kept having these blackouts and didn't know if I was being slipped some, roofies, or if I was just having blackouts from drinking. You know, I really didn't know. But at this time, I didn't think it was blackouts from drinking, because remember, I was just too young to be drinking. Yeah. So I couldn't have been that, you know. And so I came out of one of those blackouts and realized what I had did with my life. And at that point, I felt so worthless to everybody and everything. And the thing that really got me was when I looked at the lifestyle that I put my children through, and that I had nobody in my life around me anymore that wanted to be around me. And I just cried and said, God, help me. You know, all the deals were over. You know, I couldn't even come up with another deal. You know, if you do this, I'll do that. I didn't have anything left in me. And I had been to a couple of meetings in El Centro, because I was ordered to go to them. And I remember the people talking, you know, the stuff you hear reading. And you know what? I, You know, if you never know what you're going to say that's going to help somebody, because I was really gone when I was going to those meetings, and I would be in there, and I would be loaded, and I would be, you know, you guys can't be serious. Life can't be this good without drinking, you know, at least. I knew that. And but when the day came, I heard what I needed to do, and that was to surrender. And give myself to God. Like I felt like I had no other choice. That there was just nothing else to get me out of the state of mind I was in. And I cried for like 2 hours. I sat there on the bed crying, and it was really a spiritual experience, because I was in a motel room, and on the TV, and you know what they play in motel rooms on TVs. You know, if you don't go out there and get a little more experience. And that was what was on, you know. And all I could see was myself and what I had did to myself and all the experiences that I had and that I did. And I just cried and cried and cried and cried. And the guy that I was with said, "Are you going to be okay?" And I said, "No." He said, "Are you okay?" And I said, "No, but I will be." And you know, I had no idea that at that point, God was there. You know, God was there. And there was no more deals. I said, "I'm through." And the scariest thing was that I had no idea how to live life outside of the lifestyle I was in. I had no idea. I was scared. I was fearful. I felt worthless. I you know, it was a very devastating moment, and all I could do was turn to God and say, "Help me. Because I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't want this life anymore, but I don't know how not to have it. I just didn't know." And I was pretty out of it for a couple of days after that. And I went down to detox. And not by my suggestion, by the guy I was with, because he was like, "Ooh, you need to do something." you know, we are not going through that again. He actually wanted me out of his life. And I think I was in such a pitiful state, he couldn't just kick me out on the street, is probably the reality of that. And so I went, he took me down to detox. And, you know, really, I was really, you know, when you see people that are, you know, they're, you could tell their minds aren't really there. And you go, "Oof," you know, you just, it's like, wow, that was me. Because I went into detox and they told me I needed to go to the hospital and get a medical clearance. And, you know, I've been in San Diego since I was like 17 years old, and I got on the bus to go to UCSD Hospital, and I got on the wrong bus, and I kind of came to down at the beach and thought, "Where am I, and how did I get here?" And I really got scared, because at that point, I realized that I wasn't operating on what little I had left, you know, and it was a very scary realization. And so I told myself, "Okay, I will walk up to UCSD because I know the streets and I know how to get there." So that's what I did. I walked up to UCSD and I went to the wrong room. They told me to go to urgent care, and if they would have said emergency, I'd have went to emergency, you know, but they didn't. They said urgent care, and so I was stuck on urgent care. And I went up to this place where they told me urgent care was, and I walked in, and the door shut, and it locked behind me, and I was like, "Oh, no, I'm in trouble." I am in trouble. I'm like, "Okay, I've watched movies. What is it they ask you when they think you're crazy?" "Well, they ask you what day it is." I didn't know. "They ask you who the president is." I didn't know. I didn't know who the president was or the vice president. I sat there trying to think, and I'm like, "I'm really in trouble. They're going to just throw away the key." And so I walked up to the desk, and they said, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Yes, I'm here to get a medical clearance." And they said, do you realize you're in urgent care? And I said, yes, this is where I was told to come to. And they said, do you have any insurance? No. You know, I had never worked longer than a year in my life, legally. You know, so no, I didn't have any medical insurance. And they said, well, we can't help you. And so I felt a little more less worthless, you know, a little more, just a little bit more. And I was so relieved when that door unlocked and they let me out, because I really thought it was over. And the way I knew my mind was at that point was I couldn't even convince them, if I had to, that I was okay, because I knew I wasn't. And so they unlocked the door, and I got out and went back up to detox, and they told me I lied, that I didn't ever make it up there. And, well, at the time, you know, like, I was pretty gone, so I didn't realize, yes, you're right, I didn't make it to where you told me to go, but I made it to another place. But they didn't believe me. And they told me to come back, and the next night, the guy that I was with took me back over there. And I was still pretty out of it. And the guy said, well, we don't have any room. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, okay, I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I knew the streets, and I knew I didn't want to go back to the streets. I just didn't want to, you know. And I was ready for my life to change. And I thought the guys told me that if I swept the floor, I could stay there, you know. And I was like, sure, where's the broom, you know? I mean, I felt like I was that willing, you know, and it took me a couple of months of being sober and getting into a program to realize that, you know, because when I said, sure, where's the broom at, he kind of looked at the guy I was with and gave one of those looks, and, oof, you know, why are they doing that, you know? And then it took me a couple months to realize what the guy said is, well, you can stay if you want to sleep on the floor. And it really hit me how far gone I really was. You know, my mind, my hearing was messed up, but it still is on one ear. And you know, but that's where my disease had taken me to. And I can definitely say God stepped into my life, because I had no idea of where I was going from there. And I was seeing a psychologist at the Indian Center, and he gave me a list of all these programs to go to, and I ended up in this one, and it was a behavioral change program, and I had no idea. I had no idea. In fact, I'm still trying to make amends to the person that I stole their battery that lives out that was at API one time. You know, somebody had asked me to bring him something up there, and I went up there, and it was raining, and my battery died, and I opened up a thing on a car and took the battery out. So if anybody was ever at API and they came out and their battery was gone, that was me, and I would like to make amends for that. You know, those are the things that I did. But I had no idea what recovery was. I had no idea what next step I was going to take. And you know, I just was at the point where I was being led blindly by God. And I ended up in this treatment program, which was a behavioral change. And I used to sit there and go, this is where life has gotten me, you know. And I was very grateful to be there. I remember the first night laying between two clean, in a bed, a real bed, in between clean sheets. And was so grateful for that feeling, you know, because I hadn't felt that in a very long time. And, you know, I was very good at lying, so I lied to get in there. They asked me if I had any warrants out or was, you know, on probation or anything, and no, I wasn't, and I was lying. I was on the run right then and had warrants out for me, and you know, but hey, you know, I lied to get myself in, and this was a good lie. And, you know, and I'm just very grateful for that program, because when I got there, you know, it took me a while for my head to clear up, you know, for me to start paying attention to what was really going on around me. And when I started paying attention to what was going on around me, I realized that people were there to get sober. there was a lot of people in there that didn't know how to do life, just like me. And I was like, wow, I can finally relate to somebody else. And it was such a good feeling. And then, you know, if you're around recovery and you start listening and you start taking suggestions and they start telling you to be honest, and I'm like, oh, I came in here on a lie. And so I told them the truth and they told me I had to turn myself in. And you know what? I was willing. I was done. I was finished. I felt like I had no other way to go. So I was finished. I was really done. And they told me I had to turn myself in. I said, okay, I'll do that. And so I went to El Centro, back to El Centro, and turned myself in. And I'm sitting there in the probation department, handcuffed, going, what am I doing? What am I doing? This is not how I'm used to doing life, you know. I'm used to running. I'm used to running and hiding and drinking and using and covering up all these feelings and not standing up and being responsible for anything. You know, what's wrong with me? You know, and I had to say, it's okay. It's okay. If this is the walk God wants you to walk, then this is what you're going to do. If this means you go back for 2 years, because that's what my PO told me I was going to do, she said, I'm giving you the rest of your time. I said, okay. If this is what you want me to do, then I'll do it. But I was so fearful because I've been there before and I know how easy it is to get drugs and alcohol in there. So I was so fearful of ego, you know, all my friends and saying no to them that I didn't want to use and or drink, because that's in there too. So I was on my way into the county jail there, and I hit the floor, and I said, God, help me, because I don't know how I'm going to do this. And he did. Once again, he did. You know, and I went to that. They let me out. I stayed in there for 2 weeks, and they let me out to the treatment program. I went back to, the judge said it wasn't short time. It was short term. It was long term program. And I was like, okay. And, you know, and I got in there, and it was a behavioral change. I definitely need to change my behaviors. I did not know how to be responsible. I didn't know how to act around people that didn't live the lifestyle that I had lived. And so I needed to learn how to change my behaviors, and they made sure of it that I did. Yeah, it was very confronting. You know, there was a hot seat, and you got to get on it. And, you know, and I felt grateful to be there. And I left there and went to a sober living, and I was in a sober living for 14 months after that. And it wasn't my plan. That was not my plan. When I left the treatment center, my plan was to go get a motel. You know, I had just got a job, so I was going to get a motel. That was my plan because that's what I know how to do. And God intervened again, and I went to a sober living. And I was there, and I remember meetings outside the front of the sober living right there. You know, the room's right here. The sober living's right here. T was a counselor there. Yeah, that was awesome. And I used to get so mad because I was working overnights, and I had two jobs because I needed to do that to pay rent. And they'd be out there having these meetings right outside my door, and I'd get so frustrated and go, why can't you people shut up? And then I'd go out there and go to the meeting, you know. You know, and that's how God took care of me in my sobriety. You know, he placed me where I needed to be, not where I wanted to be. Because I did not want to be in a program, and I did not want to be in a sober living. And it took me, like I said, it took me about 7 years to get into Alcoholics Anonymous. And in those 7 years, yes, I did remain clean and sober. But I didn't really get involved in the program. I was with other 12-step programs, and hung around with people that looked and acted like I used to because I was comfortable around it. And then I realized that if I wanted to stay sober, I needed to make a change. And that's when God got me into Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't get myself here. Once again, God led me here, and that was to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I started working the steps. I got a sponsor and started working the steps. And my life started to change. Yeah. And even today, you know, today I'm into the steps. I stay involved in the steps. I have a service commitment. I have a step study that I go to because it's important to me. You know, because there's a lot of damage done, and I still forget that book. Like I said, I have to go and read it, you know. And I keep myself in Alcoholics Anonymous, in the meetings and in step studies, because it reminds me of, it keeps me in check and tells me how I'm supposed to be acting today. Because it's very easy for my thinking to go back. One of my sponsors used to say, we have stinking thinking. That was me, and it still is me today. So I keep myself in check in meetings. My sponsor's here tonight, and I'm very grateful for that. I have a lot of support here, you know, and that is just, you know, this, some of you guys have heard me speak over and over and over again, and like, I want to tell myself they're here for me. Maybe they come to this meeting all the time. I don't know, because I don't come here all the time. But thank you for being here for me. But, you know, life is totally different. When I got out of that recovery home, I got a job. And I'm still with the same company, and I'm a manager. They give me keys to a cash register. A couple of months ago, they ran a background check on me and cleared me to go into the pharmacy. I was like, they don't know what they're doing. Geez. And it's just amazing to me how different life can be if you let it. You know, and you give yourself the opportunity to change. You know, it's just totally different for me. I have taken some tests with the Medical Board of California and passed and licensed in a couple of different areas at work. And, I have one license. The other one I still haven't submitted, which I need to. And I tell my friends in recovery that I have to do another fifth step with the state of California, because that's what it is. I had to tell them, you know, about all my history and all my convictions and arrests, and they wanted everything in detail, and there's like five pages of them, and it was very humbling, and it was like, it was the same thing as doing a fourth step, is sitting there and writing everything out. And I get another opportunity to do that again. You know, do I want to? No. Am I going to? Yes. You know, because that's what keeps me sober today, is remembering what it was like. I remember what it's like. Do I like to share about what it's like? No, I don't. But I do, because I want to remain sober today. You know, the people in these rooms, I just, you know, it's the love in these rooms that keep me here. You know, and I'm just so grateful for everyone that's in my life, and my kids are back in my life. I have my grandchildren back in my life, and I'm a productive member of society. You know, and I have a licensing, you know, and I have a car that's mine. You know, it's in my name. I have a driver's license. You know, I came into recovery and didn't have a driver's license. Never had one before in my life, and I rode the bus for 5 months. In sobriety, and you know, you had to carry the bus space, you know. Oh, geez, that was very humbling. But you know, it just, once again, you know, every time I'm in a situation, I get to be reminded of what it's like, and that I need to be grateful for today for what I have, because it's a gift from God. You know, everything I have today is a gift from God. And I know that all it takes is that first drink, and I'm right back where I was. And that's a very scary thought. So I want to keep it fresh in my mind. And I want to thank Larry for asking me to speak here. And thank you all for being here. Thank you.